Our subject this morning is going to be on the characters of the Song of Solomon. We're going to talk about the characters of the song this morning. So, the official title, Song of Solomon, Characters. It's a wonderful book. I think when we read through it, we find an awful lot of beauty in the language. There are times that we might blush a bit when we read certain things of the book, but when we read it with a spiritual mind, we see its beauty, its glamour, and the hope that it sets before us. We need to be educated sometimes, I know I have needed to be, on some of the characters of the book to be able to fully appreciate the perspectives and the message of the book. And this morning, that's what I intend to go through at present, is the characters of the book. Some of these characters are easily identifiable. Some of them might take a little bit more thought, and when we consider the typical aspects of some of these characters, there might be some differing views on some of them. The main characters, I think, that are easily identifiable. When we talk about the bride, it's pretty evident from the scriptures that we're talking about the glorified ecclesia. We're talking about that ecclesia which the Lord gave himself for as a sacrifice, and we're talking about the coming marriage. When we talk about the groom, it's also once again pretty evident that we're speaking of Christ as we go through. The mother, the bride, the young sister, we might need a little bit more thought about, and we'll go through that this morning. The daughters of Jerusalem versus the language of the daughters of Zion is something that we've probably all caught through careful reading, that there's two different phrases there, and what are these daughters and how do they differ? Why is one called the daughters of Jerusalem and the other the daughters of Zion? We also have mention of queens and concubines and virgins. And then lastly, we have a mention of watchmen. And we don't want to be confused on those watchmen of having our minds go to Ezekiel, because we're going to find that they are different. It's a different Hebrew word. So let's start and consider the things that we read the Song of Solomon for, and we find the most encouragement with. Let's start with the bride and the groom. And certainly there's some great similarity here in the names, and so we'll first consider that. Obviously, the book is the Song of Solomon, and the personage of the groom, while typically referring to Christ in literal writing of the book, would have referred to Solomon. We know that in chapter 6 and 13 of this verse, the bride is referred to as the Shulamite. And it reads there, "Return, return, O Shulamite, return, return, that we may look upon thee. What will ye see in the Shulamite?" All right. This word is the feminine form of Solomon, which is really quite beautiful. We consider Solomon then as the groom. His bride is the Shulamite, the feminine form. And when we think about the types here of Christ in the ecclesia, the similarity of the name shows how much that the bride is a like companion of the groom. And certainly there's words of exhortation in that for us, because we need to build in ourselves, while it is time, a likeness towards the groom. In considering the groom being named Solomon, let's look first at a very well-known verse, Isaiah chapter 9 in verse 6. And in this prophecy, we know it's speaking of Christ. We read, "For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, the Almighty Ale, the Everlasting Father," or as Brother Thomas translates that, "the Father of the Aeon, the Prince of Peace." And the important factor here is that we connect peace of Solomon's name, which peace here does come from the Hebrew word Shiloh, which is related to Solomon. It connects Solomon typically with the Lord Jesus Christ. Let's turn next to Ephesians and look in chapter 2 and read the 14th verse. Speaking of the Lord, it says, "For he is our peace, who hath made both one, and hath broken down the middle wall of partition between us." In fact, the whole Ephesians chapter 2, one of the main themes contained in that chapter is peace. Peace in regards to the atonement, and the peace that the Lord can bring. In concerning the bride and how she is a like companion then to the groom, let's look at James chapter 3, and I want to read the 18th verse here. Simple statement that is made: the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. The exhortation that James is giving there to the ecclesia, to the believers, to those who are in Christ, to you and me, is that if we're going to fully manifestate the fruit of righteousness, that we know that the foundation of that is peace. And therefore, we, if we do so, are like unto our Master. In Ephesians, let's look at chapter 6. Ephesians chapter 6 in verse 15. Once again, speaking to the believer, we are exhorted to have our feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace. Solomon in the Shulamite then serve as a wonderful type of Christ in the ecclesia that will become his bride, both manifestating peace, the peace of the gospel, the peace of the word. We see in Song of Solomon chapter 5, and in the second verse, that she also is referred to with another title there. She is referred to as the Beloved. "I sleep," says that verse, "but my heart waketh. It is the voice of my Beloved that knocketh, saying, Open to me, my sister, my love, my dove, my undefiled. For my head is filled with dew, and my locks with the drops of the night." The Hebrew word here used for beloved is well known to us. It's the Hebrew word for love. It's dod, which is the root of the name David. So just as the bride bears the name of the groom in Solomon in the Shulamite, she bears a title here of the beloved as well, just as the groom, the antitypical groom, shared that name of the beloved as well. We're very familiar with Matthew chapter 3 and verse 17, where the Lord spoke after his baptism, where God spoke of the Lord after his baptism and said, "This is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased." Very important statement. He is the beloved. He is the antitypical David. So we find that this love that was seen, this beloved in the Lord, should also be something that is born in the ecclesia. Let's look at a few verses and string some ideas together here. Galatians chapter 3 in verse 27 says this: "For as many of you as have been baptized into Christ have put on Christ." That putting on of Christ, then, if you will, by being covered by the blood of his sacrifice, is in type, I would suggest, putting on the name of the beloved, as the Shulamite woman, the Shulamite bride, I should say, is referred to here in Song of Solomon, chapter 5, in verse 2. Let's also look at Revelation chapter 3, and let's look at the 12th verse there. "Of the saint who has been granted immortality, this is said, him that overcometh will I make a pillar in the temple of my God, and he shall go no more out. I will write upon him the name of my God, in the name of the city of my God, which is New Jerusalem, which cometh down out of heaven from my God, and I will write upon him my new name." When we think about the fact that Jesus bore the Yahweh name, his name Yahshua, and we think about the fact that the saint is going to have that family name written upon them, I think that we can see how appropriate it is then that the bride, as she is referred to in Song of Solomon, bears the title of the beloved. She is so loved by the groom that he gave his life for her, and they are as one. In Ephesians chapter 5, we have some very well-known verses. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 25 says this: "Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the ecclesia and gave himself for it." And then, as we continue reading, we find this comparison of Christ and the ecclesia finishes with these beautiful words: "For we are members," this is verse 30, "for we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh." The groom and the bride, then, in the Song of Solomon, and we've noticed it in our daily readings, I'm sure, how the language that they both speak bears similarities. And there's no accident in that, because the thoughts that the word has instilled in both produce like action and like verbiage, because the thoughts that motivate them are both the same: the manifestation of the glory of the Father. The next character in Song of Solomon is the mother of the bride. And I don't think that this character is difficult to determine who she is in the typical aspect of things. I think we can recognize this very well. When we go to Galatians chapter 4, we have a very well-known verse there. Galatians 4 in verse 26. And now the conversation has been here about the two sons of Abraham. All right, it's been about dealing with Isaac and Ishmael. And we know in verse 25 that we are told that one of these individuals is typical of the first covenant, Mount Sinai in Arabia. And then the other is typical of Jerusalem, which is now. And then we read verse 26. But Jerusalem, which is above, is free, which is the mother of us all. When we read this verse, we find that Sarah, as the mother of Isaac, is typical of this Jerusalem, which is above and free, and connects with her husband, Abraham, and shows us that she is typical, then, if you will, of the Abrahamic covenant. It is then, if you will, a beautiful thing that in this case, both the groom and the bride are connected to the same mother, the mother which is above and free, the mother of us all, the Abrahamic covenant, the everlasting covenant. Both find that they are, if you will, and very importantly, of the seed of the woman. The bride being connected to the seed of the woman, of course, most importantly, because she is in the groom and that she has put him on through baptism. Let's also take a look at a couple of other references. Romans chapter 9, in verses 7 through 9. Romans 9, 7 through 9. Neither because they are the seed of Abraham are they all children, but in Isaac shall thy seed be called. That is, they which are of the children of the flesh, these are not the children of God, but the children of the promise are counted for the seed. For this is the word of promise. At this time will I come, and Sarah shall have a son. And we know from that entirety of the conversation that starts in Romans 4 and builds through Romans 9 that we see that it is spiritual Israel that is found as being that son represented in Isaac through Christ. Through Christ. And we see that connection as it exists there. Let's also in this ninth chapter turn to the 33rd verse and read that as well. As it is written, behold, I lay in Zion a stumbling stone and a rock of offense, and who believeth on him shall not be ashamed. I've read this verse because it helps us connect Christ with Isaac in this whole conversation. He is the son of Sarah, if you will. He is the son of the Abrahamic covenant in type, as well as are all who are underneath that covenant, both groom and bride. Let's also look at Isaiah chapter 51, verses 1 and 2. Isaiah 51, verses 1 and 2. Hearken to me, ye that follow after righteousness, ye that seek Yahweh. Look unto the rock whence ye are hewn, into the hole of the pit whence ye are digged. Look unto Abraham your father, and unto Sarah that bare you. For I called him alone, and blessed him, and increased him. When we come into the covenant, we, if you will, have, as it were, Abraham as our father and Sarah as our mother. We are begotten from the waters of baptism by the Abrahamic covenant. The Jews thought they had Abraham for their father, but because they did not bear the language of the Son, as the bride does here in Song of Solomon, they realized they were not covered in that family name. Let's look also at 1 Peter. 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 6. Even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters ye are, as long as ye do well and are not afraid with any amazement. We see that throughout the scriptures there is this connection then between those in the ecclesia, those sisters who dwell among us, as being typical of being daughters of Sarah, daughters of the Abrahamic covenant. And I think this is a wonderful thing for us to all think about. Being a brother, it is sometimes difficult to understand the role of a sister. But being a brother, it is not difficult to see the beauty that sisters in the ecclesia put forth when they follow the exhortation of the scriptures and set forth that example for all of us brethren of the type of the bride in their actions of humility, of chasteness, of peace, in a following the word of the Lord. Let's move on now in our discussion of the characters and talk about the daughters of Jerusalem. There's a very important distinction here. While the Shulamite, the beloved, the bride, represents that glorified ecclesia, we suggest to you that the daughters of Jerusalem are those individual saints who collectively are the bride. And therefore, we have some very important things in the book concerning the daughters of Jerusalem. They are the bride's attendant virgins. They are ever there. They are ever there to care for her, just as each individual member of the ecclesia now, in its work in the ecclesia, each individual member in its work in the ecclesia is building up all of us to becoming a constituent of that bride. And in that way, we can all be attendant virgins, preparing one another to be that bride. In Revelation chapter 14, verses 1 through 4, we read this. And I looked, and lo, a lamb stood on Mount Zion, and with him 144,000, having his father's name written in their foreheads. And I heard a voice from heaven, as the voice of many waters, and as the voice of a great thunder. And I heard the voice of harpers harping with their harps, and they sung as it were a new song before the throne and before the four beasts and the elders, and no man could learn that song but the 144,000 which were redeemed from the earth. These are they which were not defiled with women, for they are virgins. They are the attendant virgins in that individually. These are they which follow the Lamb whithersoever he goeth. These were redeemed from among men, being the first fruits unto God and to the Lamb. Now, as we read that verse, we see a lot of very important things that are taught, but I want to focus on the fact that here the saints individually are described as being those who have not been defiled by the word. They are virgins. And just then, as we can see in the apocalypse, these individual saints described. And then we can turn to chapter 19 and see this group described as a bride So also in the Song of Solomon, we have the daughters of Jerusalem individually who are collectively the bride in the type of the story. The daughters of Jerusalem are said to, in verse 9 of chapter 5 of Song of Solomon, they seek to know the groom better. Where it is said there, "What is thy beloved more than another beloved?" They ask the question, seeking to understand. They want to pick out what it is about the groom that is so beautiful and special. "O thou fairest among women, what is thy beloved more than another beloved, that thou dost so charge us?" They seek to understand. They seek to know. They seek to grow in their knowledge and wisdom. In 1 Peter chapter 1, we have this written concerning the prophets, how they sought to know the groom better. They sought to understand the Savior. 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 10 and 11. "Of which salvation the prophets have inquired and searched diligently, who prophesied of the grace that should come unto you, searching what or what manner of time the Spirit of Christ which was in them did signify when it testified beforehand the sufferings of Christ and the glory that should follow." Brethren, as daughters of Zion, we have a great advantage in that we have the completed scriptures before us. It is much easier for us to come to that complete understanding than many of the prophets who had not seen the reality of the words that they wrote. And in them, we find the words to eternal life. In those words, we find the way to know and understand the groom better. And we find the recipe to transform ourselves from daughters of Jerusalem to the bride of Christ. In the book, the daughters of Jerusalem are also assigned to look for the return of the groom. They are ever watchful as attendants to the bride, looking, spying out events to see if the groom is returning to the bride. And certainly, that is what we do now. We constantly are on the lookout. We constantly examine the word and the events around us. We constantly long for the return of our Lord. 2 Timothy chapter 4 in verse 8, Paul writes, "Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, and not to me only, but unto all them also that love his appearing." Just as the daughters of Jerusalem loved, if you will, the appearing of the groom and looked for that return, so do we today. In Hebrews chapter 9, in verse 28, we have this: "So Christ was once offered to bear the sins of many, and unto them that look for him shall he appear the second time without sin unto salvation." The exhortation for us is to be like the daughters of Jerusalem and to be constantly looking out for the return of the Lord. And really, there's something in these verses that we've read from 2 Timothy 4:8 and Hebrews 9:28 that tells us that it's not just that we look for his return, but we long for it. It is our only desire. It is our only focus. And everything that we do is in preparation for that day. The daughters of Jerusalem are also instructed to inform the groom how much the bride longs for him. And we see throughout the scriptures other verses that speak to this longing as well. I've chosen a couple of references that we know can refer to not just ourselves, but are reflective of the words of the groom as well in his lifetime. And I think these verses are appropriate because they show how much the bride needs to be like her groom in the longing for righteousness. Psalm chapter 42, verses 1 through 3. As the hart panteth after the water brooks, so panteth my soul after thee, O God. My soul thirsteth for God, for the living God. When shall I come and appear before God? My tears have been my meat day and night, while they continually say unto me, where is thy God? Now, these words certainly are very appropriate to the groom, but they're appropriate to us as well. Our soul needs to thirst for the glory of the Almighty. Let's also look in Psalms chapter 63 and read the first three verses there. O God, thou art my God, early will I seek thee. My soul thirsteth for thee, my flesh longeth for thee, in a dry and thirsty land where no water is. To see thy power and thy glory, so as I have seen thee in the sanctuary. Because thy loving kindness is better than life, my lips shall praise thee. Very appropriate again, words as they relate to the Lord and how he felt in his mortal life and how he longed to be with his Father, and very appropriate to how the bride longs for the groom as she is portrayed in the Song of Solomon. Let's read one more out of Psalms. Psalm 119 and verse 81 and 82. My soul fainteth for thy salvation, but I hope in thy word. Mine eyes fail for thy word, saying, when wilt thou comfort me? The next character in the book might be something that we find a bit puzzling at first, or had found a bit puzzling at first as we read through the book over and over. The daughters of Zion. The language seems very similar. Daughters of Jerusalem, daughters of Zion. But clearly in the Song of Solomon, there are two different classes of daughters spoken of throughout the book. The daughters of Jerusalem, which we have relayed to the individual constituents of the bride, and now we come across the daughters of Zion. In chapter 8 of the book, in the 5th verse, we find that these are observers of the bridal party and not part of the bridal party. All right, Song of Solomon, chapter 8, verse 5, where they say, who is this that cometh up from the wilderness, leaning upon her beloved? I raised thee up under the apple tree. There thy mother brought thee forth. There she brought thee forth that bare thee. So, it's interesting. She's not a part of the bridal party. but she is an observer of it. And the language here is very interesting. Who is this that cometh from the wilderness? It reminds us, does it not, of the prophet Isaiah in chapter 63, when we read there of another observation that takes place, when natural Israel will say, who is this that cometh from Edom with dyed garments from Bozrah that is glorious in his apparel, traveling in the greatness of his strength, I that speak in righteousness, mighty to save. The daughters of Zion see this glorious group approaching, this glorious, joyful, bridal party, but they are not of it. In chapter 3 of Song of Solomon, verses 6 through 11, we also read this concerning these daughters of Zion. All right? Song of Solomon, chapter 3, 6 through 11. Who is this that cometh out of the wilderness like pillars of smoke, perfumed with myrrh and frankincense, with all powders of the merchant? Behold his bed, which is Solomon's. 80 valiant men are about it, of the valiant of Israel. They all hold swords, being experts in war. Every man hath his sword upon his thigh, because of fear in the night. King Solomon made himself a chariot of the wood of Lebanon. He made the pillars thereof of silver, the bottom thereof of gold, the covering of it of purple, the midst thereof being paved with love for the daughters of Jerusalem. Note the important distinction here, being paved with love for the daughters of Jerusalem, or as some translations have here, from the daughters of Jerusalem. And then look at the language of verse 11. Go forth, O ye daughters of Zion, and behold King Solomon with the crown wherewith his mother crowned him in the day of his espousals, in the day of the gladness of his heart. We see then that the daughters of Zion are observers of the bride and the groom as they arrive. Let's look at Revelation chapter 19 and consider verses 7 through 9. Revelation 19, 7 through 9. Let us be glad and rejoice and give honor to him, for the marriage of the Lamb is come, and his wife hath made herself ready. And to her was granted that she should be arrayed in fine linen, clean and white. For the fine linen is the righteousness of the saints. And he saith unto me, write, blessed are they which are called into the marriage supper of the Lamb. And he saith unto me, these are the true sayings of God. So the daughters of Zion stand off, and they observe the love between the daughters of Jerusalem, the bride, and the groom. In Revelation chapter 15, in verse 8. And the temple was filled with smoke from the glory of God and from his power, and no man was able to enter in the temple till the seven plagues and the seven angels were fulfilled. There's this group then that stands afar off, and they see these things, maybe not fully understanding it, but they see it as it comes. In Isaiah chapter 3, in verse 16, we have language that clearly connects natural Israel with this daughter of Zion. Isaiah chapter 3, verse 16. Moreover, Yahweh saith, because the daughters of Zion are haughty and walk with stretched forth necks and wanton eyes, walking and mincing as they go, and making a tinkling with their feet. All right, we'll stop our reading there. There's more that we could read there, but we see the connection then with the daughters of Zion to natural Israel, who are in need of conversion, who, if you will, stand afar off. They see the glory of the groom and the bride. And we know from the testimony of scriptures that when that bridal party arrives, that many of them will understand that they inherited lies and vanities from their fathers and did not understand the truth and certainly needed to be converted. Let's try to move through this a little bit quicker to pick up a little bit of pace here. We also have in the story queens and concubines and virgins. In Song of Solomon, chapter 6, verses 9 and 10, we read of this class of people here. They might sound a little bit similar to what has come before, so as you go through your readings, you see these differences subtly between the groups here. Song of Solomon, chapter 6, verses 9 and 10. My dove, my undefiled, is but one. She is the only one of her mother. She is the choice one of her that bare her. The daughters saw her and blessed her. Yea, the queens and the concubines, and they praised her. Who is she that looketh forth as the morning, fair as the moon, clear as the sun, and terrible as an army with banners? This group then here in verse 9, described as queens, concubines, and virgins, we suggest for you, are those who recognize, who stand off of as observers, but they recognize the glory of the bridal party. They are, if you will, those of the nations who will see Christ and his bride returning and accept that he is the Son of God. Though many may have thought, while being part of Christendom astray, might have thought that they would one day be part of this bridal party. They are like those in Zechariah chapter 8 and verse 23 who will exclaim, you know, we will go with thee because we have heard that God is with thee. The last two characters can be somewhat interesting. The watchman. Now, I mentioned in the preparatory remarks that we don't want to confuse the watchman of chapter 5 and verse 7, where it reads, the watchman that went about the city found me. They smote me. They wounded me. The keepers of the walls took away my veil from me. We certainly don't want to confuse these watchmen with the watchmen described by Ezekiel. In fact, the Hebrew words are different here. They may be rooted in the same. I haven't given that much investigation to it as maybe I could have to this point, but they are different words, and I haven't been able to trace them back to one another. But from this verse, this seventh verse in chapter 5, they are clearly persecutors of the bride. All right? They are persecutors of the bride. And therefore, we recommend to you that they are typical of those in all nations and governments and powers who have all their glorious monuments and figures and the like, but in reality they are nothing but persecutors of the true bride, because they mock the ecclesia and what she believes and stands for. They can't accept it, and they view it as extreme when it really is rooted in truth. The Lord encouraged us in John chapter 15, verses 18 and 20, and said, if the world hate you, ye know that it hated me before it hated you. Remember the word that I said unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord. If they have persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they have kept my sayings, they will keep yours also. The watchmen, then, are typical of those who persecute the daughters of Jerusalem and the bride and the groom, the members of the bridal party. But it, as Revelation 11:15 says, they are all destined to bow down, some made by force to bow down before the King of all the earth. The last character in the Song of Solomon is the young sister. And this is one of those areas where we look in the scriptures and perhaps in public we might slightly blush a little bit as we read some of the language, but when we consider it spiritually, it is actually something very lovely to think about. Song of Solomon, chapter 8, verses 8 and 9. We have a little sister, and she hath no breast. What shall we do for our sister in the day when she shall be spoken for? And then the groom answers the bride in verse 9 and says this: if she be a wall, we will build upon her a palace of silver. And if she be a door, we will enclose her with boards of cedar. Just like a young sister is one who has not yet reached maturity, the young sister here, we suggest, typifies those who, at the beginning of the kingdom age, submit themselves to the gospel, but they are still in need of a probation. They need to grow in spiritual maturity. They need to grow up in the faith so that they might receive their own reward. And so the groom answers the bride, if she be this, then we will do this. The young sister, then, we recommend to you, represents the nations, the mortal nations who will live under the reign of the groom and live under the teachings of the bride, if you will, and grow up in faith during the kingdom age until they obtain their own maturity and can receive their own reward and become a collective part of the bride. Zechariah chapter 14 and verse 16. Zechariah 14 and 16. And it shall come to pass that everyone that is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem shall even go up from year to year to worship the King, Yahweh of hosts, and to keep the feast of tabernacles. And if they do so faithfully, they will be those who are described in Revelation chapter 20 and verse 5. No longer a young sister, but a daughter who has grown up to become a daughter of Jerusalem themselves, and then constituents of the bride of the eighth day. Revelation 20, verse 5, but the rest of the dead live not again until the 1,000 years were finished. Verses 11 and 12 of that same chapter. And I saw a great white throne, and him that sat on it, from whose face the earth and heaven fled away, and there was no place for them. And I saw the dead, small and great, stand before God, and the books were opened, and another book was opened, which is the book of life, and the dead were judged out of those things which were written in the books according to their works. There will be an opportunity at the end of the kingdom age for those described as the young sister to grow and to mature and to also become consubstantial with the Father, to become part of that bride in the kingdom age. The Song of Solomon is a beautiful book. It's a song that is divided into 12 parts, and it describes the love between Christ and his bride. It describes the affection that should exist for each and every one of us in the longing for the return of our own Lord. And we hope and pray that that day will soon come.